Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. We hear a lot about one of the strongest Western sanctions against Russia, the Magnitsky Act, but what's the story behind it? And who was Magnitsky? Let's get to the bottom line. Ever since invading Ukraine 2 months ago, Russia's become the most sanctioned country in the world, with more than 5,000 specific sanctions targeting individuals, industries, companies, and organizations. It's going to take months and perhaps years before Russia feels the full force of these measures. And we saw some of the first effects just last weekend when European sanctions took effect against trucks from Russia and Belarus. All told, they'll keep about $1 trillion in Russian assets from flowing through the markets and banking systems of America and its partners. One of the most powerful Western tools to isolate Russia is the Magnitsky Act, a recent law that allows the U.S. government to sanction specific people identified as corrupt or human rights abusers. Different versions of the law have already spread to the EU, the UK, Canada, and many other countries, and it's been a real thorn in the side of Russian President Vladimir Putin since day one. So how and why did Putin become so obsessed with this law, and how is it being used in Russia and beyond? Today, we're talking with two of the people who've been personally involved in the Magnitsky Act from the beginning. Congressman Jim McGovern is a Democrat who has represented Massachusetts in Congress for more than 25 years and wrote the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act and introduced its follow-up, the Global Magnitsky Act, in 2016. And Bill Browder, the founder of Hermitage Capital Management, whose company was at one time the largest foreign portfolio investor in Russia. It's his lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, who allegedly was killed in a Russian jail in 2009, setting off the chain of events that leads us to today. Bill has just published his second book telling his story, and it reads like a real thriller. Freezing Order, a true story of money laundering, murder, and surviving Vladimir Putin's wrath. Thanks to both of you for joining us. And I just have to start at the beginning with the name Sergei Magnitsky. And I just want to tell our audience, when you read this book, you'll learn that a former U.S. Congressman, Dana Rohrabacher, worked very hard to try to keep Magnitsky's name from being on a version of Bill that was there. We're going to get to that in a moment. But tell us, Bill Browder, who Sergei Magnitsky was.
Sergei Magnitsky was my Russian lawyer. I ran the largest foreign investment fund in Russia called the Hermitage Fund back in the 90s and early 2000s. My offices I started pointing out corruption in the companies I invested in. The authorities didn't like that. They expelled me from the country, declared me a threat to national security, raided my offices, seized my documents, and those documents were used in a complex and very cynical $230 million tax rebate fraud in which officials stole $230 million of taxes that my firm had paid. I hired the smartest lawyer I knew in Moscow, a guy named Sergei Magnitsky. At the time, he was 35. He worked for an American law firm. He was the one who uncovered the fraud, figured out who was involved, testified against those officials, and in retaliation, he was arrested, tortured for 358 days, and murdered in Russian police custody on November 16th, 2009. And it's been my mission since his murder, I put aside all of my business activities to go after the people who killed him and make sure they face justice. And that's led to, I guess, what we're going to talk about today and led me to Congressman McGovern, who eventually introduced the Magnitsky Act.
Congressman McGovern, you have been involved with writing this act at the very beginning. I'd like to hear about it. But I'd also like to give our audience a sense that this was not a slam dunk in this country, in the United States, at the beginning. In fact, I think one of the shocking things to me as a journalist in the media, and I look at law firms, I look at PR firms, all of us have watched the events that Bill Browder has been connected to unfold over years, and now we're acting, wow. So you were there early on. Why were you there early on, and what does the Magnitsky Act do from your perspective?
Well, I co-chair the Tom Lantos Human Rights Commission, and it's named after Tom Lantos, the only Holocaust survivor that served in Congress. And we were doing a hearing. Bill Browder testified before that hearing. That was in May of 2010, if I believe. And I listened to him tell the story of Sergei Magnitsky and the corruption and the human rights abuses that continued in Russia. And I thought to myself, we got to do something. And kind of the usual thing that members of Congress do is we issue a statement or we issue a press release or we do something. And I said to him after he testified, we need to we need to put this into legislative form. We need to pass a bill to make it clear to those who are guilty of corruption and human rights violations in Russia and, quite frankly, around the world, that there's a consequence. And it may not be a blanket sanction, but you will be sanctioned. Individuals will be sanctioned for bad behavior. And that's essentially what the bill does. It took us a couple of years to get it passed, and not everybody was universally excited about us passing it. There are people in the administration at the time. Obama was president, but I don't think it would matter whether it was a Democrat or Republican in office who didn't like the fact that kind of Congress was maybe micromanaging a little bit here. I don't think that's what we were doing, but we were giving them a tool to hold corrupt individuals and human rights abusers accountable.
Well, Senator John McCain was a big supporter of this act. I know Senator Roger Wicker was, both of whom I would put on the conservative end of the Republican Party, working with a liberal Massachusetts congressman, Jim McGovern, in this. So, you know, there was bipartisan. Who were the opponents to this? I mean, I just reading with Dana Rohrabacher, Jim, and I'm somewhat stunned.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what planet Dana Rohrabacher lives on, but he was somehow under the illusion that Vladimir Putin was not a bad guy. And there were some people, I think, in the administration and the establishment at the time who preferred us not to move forward legislatively. But look, the story of Sergei Magnitsky is incredibly powerful. The atrocities and the corruption of Vladimir Putin and those around him really are almost unequaled anywhere in the world. And I thought, and again, I give Bill Browder the credit for this because he inspired us, that we needed to do something beyond just, isn't this terrible? And as you know, I mean, this became Putin's number one obsession. He wanted to repeal the Magnitsky Act. He appealed to Donald Trump and his advisors to get rid of it. But luckily, we had people like John McCain, Roger Wicker, Ben Cardin, who's a leader in the Senate, a bipartisan group of senators and congresspeople who said, you know what, we're going to do something here. We're going to do something meaningful. And we did. But this would not have happened without Bill Browder bringing this to our attention. And I just want to say for the record that he's one of the most courageous people that I have ever met. And I admire his tenacity and not giving up and understanding that that Sergei Magnitsky's legacy is going to be that we are holding human rights abusers and corrupt officials in Russia and around the world accountable for their actions.
Well, thank you, Congressman Jim McGovern, as well. We know you have to run, so we'd like to thank you for this time with us today, and we're going to continue the conversation now with Bill. Thanks. Well, right now, Bill, I would argue that on Vladimir Putin's dashboard, or maybe his dartboard, there are two faces. There's Bill Browder, and there's President Zelensky of Ukraine. And, you know, maybe there's a link between some of these, which we can get to in a moment. But it's rare to find a case. I mean, look, I mean, you're a money manager and you may be great, but it's very odd to hear someone like Vladimir Putin obsessed with someone like you. But it was in full broad daylight in the meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, where Putin said in response to Trump talking about some GRU officials that had been picked up in the United States, you know, maybe we could trade these or, you know, extradite them if we'd only give up Mr. Browder. Vladimir Putin said this. And in response, let's hear what President Trump said.
President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer.
Bill Browder, did the President of the United States just offer to trade you in because of the Magnitsky, because of these issues, to the President of Russia?
It's as simple as that. I mean, I normally live in London, but I was in the U.S. at the time, and I started getting, my phone started lighting up with messages from all sorts of people saying, you got to watch this thing. I hadn't been watching it, and I turned on the recording, and indeed, so the summit in Helsinki was taking place just after Robert Mueller had indicted 12 Russian GRU officers for hacking the 2016 election. And so the question to Putin was, are you going to hand these guys over? And Putin said, yeah, I'll hand them over if you hand over, if America hands over Bill Browder. And then they go to Trump. And as you just said, Trump said he thought that was an incredible offer. And so I was sitting there having all sorts of emotions, probably mostly negative emotions flowing through my head, imagining that a bunch of blacked out SUVs from the Department of Homeland Security were going to pull up any second, grab me and put me on a rendition flight. But, you know, when things calmed down and it took, by the way, it took Trump 4 days and a Senate vote 98-0 not to hand me over before Trump walked it back. And so those 4 days were pretty harrowing. But during those 4 days, I also came to think that the Magnitsky Act must be really important. And I've gotten under Vladimir Putin's skin in such a profound way.
Right.
And I'll also say one other thing, which is really interesting, which is that Putin never mentions the names of his enemies.
Right.
If you listen to him, he says that man, that politician, that lawyer. For him to mention my name really shows how I'm living rent-free in his brain at the moment.
Bill, you know, one of the other just hard-to-miss dimensions of your book is that so many of the people you worked with on this act worked to try to bring, to fix, you know, to understand where the money was going have died or were poisoned. One of these is Vladimir Kara-Murza. And I guess my question to you in all of this is, you make a point in your book to talk about the good Russians, the Russians who are there to help one another. You talk about the doctor who saved Vladimir's life when he was poisoned before. But you have a significant degree of skepticism as well about the players there. How do you distinguish between good and bad in that system? And who are some of the other heroes that we should know about in this story?
Well, thank you for bringing up Vladimir Kara-Murza. And I should just to put some context for your viewers, to get the Magnitsky Act passed, it wasn't just me going to Congressman McGovern and others. There was a whole sort of village of people doing that. And one of the most important questions that Congress asked was, what do the Russians think about a piece of legislation to freeze the assets of some of their corrupt individuals? And Boris Nemtsov, who was the leader of the opposition, and Vladimir Kara-Murza, who is one of his proteges, would routinely show up in parliaments and in Congress all over the world with me, and they would give it. They would say it from the Russian side, and they would say that the Magnitsky Act was the most pro-Russian legislation that's ever been introduced because it sanctions the crooks and criminals who are stealing all the money from the Russian people. And so Vladimir and Boris went out there and said that. And Boris was assassinated in February of 2015 in front of the Kremlin. And then after that, Vladimir was poisoned, and he came within an inch of his life of dying, literally. And then they poisoned him again. And a couple weeks ago, I was with him in London. We were both speaking at a fundraiser for victims in Ukraine of this Russian war. And afterwards, we had dinner, and I said to him, "Are you going to come to my book party in Washington?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm going to be there, but I'm going to Moscow first." And I said, "No, you can't do that. They've already tried killing you twice." And he said, "How can I not do that? I'm a leader in the opposition movement. I'm calling on Russians to rise up against Vladimir Putin to defy him. And what are they going to think if I'm too scared to go back to my own country?" He went back to Russia. He went back to Moscow right after our dinner. He was interviewed on CNN. On CNN, he called Vladimir Putin a murderer, and an hour later, he was arrested, and he's currently in custody in Russia, in the custody of his killers. And so when we talk about good Russians and bad Russians, there's a lot of bad Russians in Vladimir Putin's government, but we have to distinguish between effectively an occupied country occupied by criminals and murderers, and then the people like Vladimir Kara-Murza, the heroes, and there's Alexei Navalny, who's currently in prison after they tried to kill him, and Boris Nemtsov, who's no longer with us, and many, many others. And so the Russian people aren't uniformly in any way supporting this murderous war. There's a lot of people who really, really don't want it, and the ones who are speaking out are so brave because you're not allowed to say you don't want a war. You're not even allowed to call it a war. You go to jail for 15 years just calling it a war. And so It's a very fraught situation, but we have to understand that Vladimir Putin is the one who's responsible for this. His cronies around him are responsible. And he has, of course, co-opted many Russians, but we shouldn't tar every Russian with this brush.
Well, you have a number of people that have come out and basically said in Vladimir Putin's camp that Bill Browder was the one who committed the criminal act. Bill Browder was the one who killed Sergei Magnitsky, that Bill Browder was the one who took this tax rebate, which your company had given to the Russian government, gotten a rebate, and he had engaged in all these fraudulent schemes.
It wasn't just the Russians doing this. And I write about it in great detail in my book. Effectively, the Russian intelligence services have co-opted and paid explicitly. This is not even hidden. A bunch of Americans, PR agents, lobbyists, lawyers, and other people in Washington, in New York, to go around and tell their story and try to convince everybody that the Russians are the good guys and that the victims are the bad guys. And we had there's a very famous lobbyist in Washington, a guy named Glenn Simpson. Glenn Simpson he was the guy from Fusion GPS that put together the Trump dossier. And while he was working on the Trump dossier, he was working for the Russians, trying to stop the Magnitsky Act and trying to defame me in Washington.
Look, I'll tell our audience for a minute. The book is complex, and it's a fascinating thing to go through. You see banks that you know, like in Denmark, Danske Bank, with literally billions upon billions of dollars going through a small branch in Tallinn, Estonia. And you see this woman, Natalia Veselnitskaya, who you were battling with over one of the companies that had allegedly been part of the scheme that you were able to track, given the precision of American tracking of U.S. dollars. You were able to track one of the players to this, and the U.S., you know, basically federal investigators were going after this company. And I guess in this, I'd love you to just tell us a little bit about that, but also Sergei Roldugin, who turns out to be vastly richer than Yo-Yo Ma, a cellist from Russia, the richest cellist in the world that I've never heard of until reading your book. But you link all this to Vladimir Putin himself, and that's something I've never seen done before. And perhaps you can tell us why you're on his dashboard.
Well, this is really an important story. So after Sergei Magnitsky was murdered, my first priority was to get the Magnitsky Act passed, which we've discussed. But my other priority was to figure out who got the $230 million that he had exposed that led to his murder. And we spent 10 years with a team of full-time investigators looking for that money. And as time passed, we were able to put together little bits and pieces, which led to the puzzle becoming clear. And one of the things that we discovered was that money went all over the world. You mentioned Natalia Veselnitskaya. She was the lawyer for the son of a Russian government official who got some of the money and then bought a whole bunch of properties in New York. We alerted the Department of Justice to those properties, and they froze those properties and filed a federal forfeiture order, which ended in a settlement where the U.S. government got $6 million. But as we were doing the investigation, probably the biggest and the most interesting discovery was that there was a guy his name is Sergei Roldugin. He was a cellist from Russia. So he played the cello in St. Petersburg. And according to the Panama Papers, this particular cellist was worth $2 billion. And where did he get all this money? He got the money from Russian state banks, from Russian oligarchs. And then the obvious question is, why would a cellist get all this money from all these people? Why, I mean, as you mentioned, Yo-Yo Ma, I think, is worth, $25 million, and this guy's worth $2 billion. He's a richer cellist. And the answer is, and this is widely acknowledged by the U.S. government, by the European Union, that this particular cellist is a nominee for Vladimir Putin. He was Putin's best friend from childhood. He's the godfather of one of Putin's daughters. He introduced Putin to his first wife,
right,
and he's a guy who Putin trusts. And the most interesting part of our investigation was we discovered that Sergei Roldugin's companies were connected to the Magnitsky case, that they got some of the money. And so if you put it all together and you link up all the dots, what we discovered is that Vladimir Putin was a beneficiary of the crime that Sergei Magnitsky was killed over. And why is that so significant? It explains why he was asking Trump to hand me over. It explains why he was ready to ruin his relations with the United States over the Magnitsky Act. It explains why he never prosecuted anybody who was obviously involved in the killing, because he was part of the organized crime group who got the money.
Well, let me just ask you finally, Bill, you know, a freezing order, which is the title of this book, freezing order is an order of a national government to freeze assets within a boundary of a government. And you go through the various freezing orders that your efforts help stop. But let's be candid for a minute. $230 million is a lot of money to me, but it's not a lot of money to Vladimir Putin. It's not a lot of money to governments. And so I guess to take the small tributary you had and kind of look at that, how big is this network? What are your suspicions about how big the corruption in government and Vladimir, you know, Putin's other Rodulgans out there? Because what you've done just seems too small given all of the heat you've taken for it. What's really going on?
Well, that's let me call it the trillion-dollar question. So what we discovered was when we were looking for all this money laundering, we discovered that 200 million of the 230 million of the crime that Sergei Magnitsky was killed over flowed through Danske Bank in Estonia, their branch in Estonia. So this is a Danish bank with an Estonian branch. 200 million flowed through that bank. When we started to pull on the strings and we started working with some investigative journalists from Denmark and other countries, we discovered that when all was said and done, it wasn't 200 million going through that branch, but 230 billion going through that branch of dirty Russian money. So this is one bank, one branch of a Danish bank, 230 billion. And so I would estimate that if we could lift the hood on everything, the total amount of money stolen by the Putin regime since Putin first took power is $1 trillion. And that explains why he's asking Trump to hand me over. That explains why he made it his single largest foreign policy priority to repeal the Magnitsky Act. That explains why everything is focused on this piece of legislation and this investigation, because Putin understands that this is his Achilles heel. His money in the West, all the money he's stolen, is what he's ultimately, that's what he was banking on having, using for wars, using for whatever he wanted to use it for. And now all of a sudden it's getting frozen by governments around the world as we speak.
Well, Putin foe Bill Browder, author of Freezing Order, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
So what's the bottom line? What you heard today is not straight out of a Jason Bourne or a John le Carre novel. It's real life. We're talking about billions upon billions of dollars sliding through global networks of money laundering and intrigue, offshore havens, people who think they're way above the law, huge investments in property markets in America and in Europe, you name it. In these circles, if you raise your voice, you could be in big trouble. Yes, today we do have the Magnitsky Act, but it took years to get here. And these were years where Western governments were giving lectures to the world about fighting corruption. And all these watchdog agencies, banks, law firms, and even the media sat on the sidelines. These days, folks around the world understand a lot more about how the rich and powerful operate. But sadly, quite a few brave people working with my guest today, well, listen, they died in efforts to get the Magnitsky Act passed in the U.S. and in other Western countries. Now that personal palaces and giant yachts are being confiscated around the globe, perhaps the rule of law can fight its way back and purge out enablers and push reset on the protections that rule of law societies are supposed to have. And that's the bottom line.